And in the studio this morning, we have got Jill Hickson, who is part of putting together the film The Women Who Were Never There, which is about women demanding jobs at the BHP Steelworks in Illawarra through the 19... when did that campaign start? In the 70s, yeah? And then throughout the 80s and...
So that's right, Zane. So with the rise of the women's liberation movement, women got confidence, I suppose, to go and tackle some of these big companies for jobs. But the real problem was that there were no jobs for women, and women were in desperate situations where they needed to earn a living, particularly if they were single, but even if they were in a relationship. It's very hard to live on the wage of one person. So it did start in the 70s, and in particular the film that we've made, The Women Who Were Never There, is set in 1973 because it was a particular period or a particular year where women took a lot of very exciting actions. Hmm. Now, in reality, we're looking to make a film around the 1980 to 1994 Jobs for Women campaign, which was so significant that it changed industrial law, legal law, and the women won. Over 700 women won jobs and won compensation once they were retrenched and so on by the biggest company in Australia, BHP. So it was a very significant period. We decided to make the film on the 1973, partly because it's a story never been told, lost in history, and because we're trying to raise the funds to make the 1980 to 1994 feature film.
Okay. So this, The Women Who Were Never There, this will remain a short film, because I remember seeing you at the Socialism of the 21st Century conference, and there was like a six-minute trailer, but you were talking about...
That was actually the first 7 minutes of the film, 6 minutes of the film. So the film's 25 minutes or 24 minutes.
Yeah.
Originally making a short film, it was supposed to be 7 to 10, but we just couldn't fit the story into that time limit, so it spanned it out to 24 minutes. It actually carries three stories in it. And it's kind of a prelude to the 1980s.
Yeah,
it sort of sets up. And you've got to remember, in 1973, Gough Whitlam from the Labor Party had just ended conservative rule of, 25 years or something, and ushered in, and he was elected in December 72. So things hadn't started to change, but they were about to change. Neville Rann, in the premier of the Labor in the Labor Party, was premier in 1977. He did try, with the backing of women, to get anti-discrimination legislation through the parliament, but because he was in opposition, he didn't have the numbers, and it wasn't passed till 1977 when he was in government. So the difference between the women's struggle in the 1973 was, even though they actually won at a certain point through their actions, the women activists did not get jobs. They employed a couple of hundred women, but not the women activists. By getting the anti-discrimination legislation passed in 1977 in New South Wales, in the 1980 campaign, they were able to use that legislation to take on BHP. And the women activists, all the women who were carrying out the tent embassy and all sorts of actions, also got jobs.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so it was quite good. It's quite a good story because it's about working class women taking on the biggest company in Australia and winning.
Mm.
But it's also indicative of the fact that women's history is lost. The legal laws that were changed around the anti-discrimination legislation, plus that was tested, was the first class action that won in Australia, isn't taught in the legal studies in universities. They do make mention of it because it was significant. The other thing, it changed industrial laws for all workers because, I don't know if you know, in those days they had a lifting. One of the things they had, one of the reasons they said that women couldn't work in BHP was because they couldn't lift more than 16 kilos. At the time when it was investigated as to, what jobs do require a 16-kilo lifting, they couldn't tell you. It was really, it became quite clear that it was just a lie. It was just made up to prevent the women from getting jobs. But this was also at a time when there were just jobs. I mean, BHP couldn't get enough workers from Port Kembla. Eventually had to go to the government in 1973 and ask to get 800 migrants to enter Australia because there were no people in Wollongong to take those jobs. And of course there were. There was half the human race. It were the women.
Mm.
But they weren't given the jobs.
And speaking of migrants, seeing that first 6 minutes of the film when I was in Sydney a couple of months back, I come from a partly migrant family myself. My grandparents on my mum's side were from the Netherlands, and that really struck me about the introduction to the film is that there was a lot of migrant women living in Wollongong, and that they were a very important part of this campaign.
So in 1980, they were crucial. There was over 700 women, majority, 95% were migrant women, and they got jobs. In the 1973 campaign, because the women activists knew that they would not get jobs, they actually disencouraged migrant women from getting involved on the front lines of the campaign. So they didn't go and chain themselves to the gates of BHP. They didn't sneak in and do a work-in because they wouldn't get jobs. And these women were quite desperate for jobs. When they won, BHP did employ a couple of hundred women, and they were all migrant women. So they did get the jobs, but none of the activist women, who were Australian, whatever, didn't get the jobs. Whereas it was totally different in the 1980 campaign. And in fact, I think it went something like there was an ad in the there was a newspaper article in the local paper which said that women were taking on BHP to get jobs. And a lot of the migrant women read it as there were jobs at BHP. Now, these women had set up a tent embassy outside BHP, the most busiest area where the workers were coming in, the trains, the buses and so on, and the cars were and trucks were coming past, which was just opposite the employment office. So the women actually, a lot of my women rushed down to the employment office to reapply because they'd already applied many times. And then they walked away going, well, there are no jobs for women, because they literally would tell you, there are no jobs for women. And then they noticed across the road, and in fact the women had leaflets and were encouraging the women to cross the road and join the campaign. And some of the migrant women went over, realised what was going on, and then went back to their communities and just rallied women. And everyone knows how strong women can be when they're rallied. Well, you know, 700 women in the end were in a class action against BHP. Mm. Quite historical.
Impressive stuff. Sorry, I'm hogging all the questions here.
I think Zane can keep on joining the questions.
Another thing that I noticed, and I was actually selling my labour yesterday and was unable to make the film, which I'm bummed about because I was really excited to see the...
You can buy, I'm just interrupting, you can buy the film on DVD if you want.
Oh, excellent. Okay. How do I do that?
We have them. There's the Resistance Centre right now. The Resistance Centre on Swanson Street.
Yeah.
Or in Swanson Street. Yep.
Or is there a website?
Yes, there's a website. Yep. Jobs for Women Film Project.
Yeah.
.com, and they'll be available there as well.
Excellent. One of the things that struck me when I saw that first 6 minutes was the scene where the young women go down and lock themselves onto the front gates of BHP. And it struck me as being just like some anti-coal protests that I've been to. It was bizarre. It was like a replica of coal protests that I've been to. And what have you found has been the response of young women to this project? Because I don't know, I think I've seen Rocking the Foundations, saw Black and White. It seems a bit like it's riveting viewing once you get into it. But this project is all full colour film recreations of past events. And it really takes that 40 plus year gap between now and when this happened, and it just dissolves and it feels like it happened yesterday, which I found really inspiring. I'm wondering, what's it been like, the response that you've got from young women in particular?
That's a good question, Zane. We've had the launch in Wollongong and Sydney and now Melbourne. Across the board, particularly women, love it because it's a women's story and it's strong women, and it's about women struggling and fighting and actually winning. The situation for women today is not much different. There are a lot of differences, but there's also not a lot of difference. So, you know, I always quote the quote that in 1922, the sex segregation of women into women's jobs was something like 84%. So 84% of women workers worked in women-dominated industries, sewing, cooking, secretarial, nursing, teaching, and so on. Today, it's 82%. It's not a significant difference. Hmm. You look at the... So in 1973, there was a thing called the family wage. Now, probably you never heard of the family wage, or, you know, young. It was the wage that was set legislation for what women could earn in relation to men. Women earned 75% of what men's wages were. Today, it's 83%. So, okay, we've improved. We haven't... But now, today, for example, the very big difference is we don't talk about the family wage. No one's even heard of the family wage anymore. We talk about equal pay. We don't have equal pay, and we're still fighting for equal pay, but that's the demand. And of course, women have won lots of demands, but you all know the statistics for women and violence. Two women a week are getting killed by their partners. That's those getting killed. The number of those getting bashed and, you know, tortured and hurt in their relationships is so high. And certainly I think for today's young women, that's one of the key issues. Violence against women is how to solve that. But of course, for anyone like yourself having to sell your labour, the bottom line is you need a job. You need a job, you can have money, you have independence, you're not dependent on anyone else, and you can have your own life. So we think it is a film that will inspire women, young women. We're hoping that it will also re-engage them with unions, because that's the other thing that's gone, is that, like, in those days, I mean, in Port Kembla, and, you know, you're from Newcastle, unions were your community. You socialised, they fought for your rights and all those sorts of things. Today, with all the attacks on the unions, people don't see unions like that anymore. But, you know, of course, if you don't have collective action, if you don't have a union, then you're not going to win against the bosses. You have this individual fight against a huge company or whatever, you're not going to win. But if you take collective action, you've got a union behind you, you can win. You don't always win, but you can win. And that's the other message of the film, is that you need collective action and you need the union behind you.
Well, we should get to the activist news. One last thing. You mentioned when you came in that tell us a bit about the feature film and about the idea of building a narrative into this so that it's not just a strictly dry collection of political events, but it's an engaging human story.
Well, that's why what's so good about feature films is that you've got the time to develop the characters, to give their stories, to show their flaws, and to have the struggles. The problem with the short film was character development. It was a bit hard because it was such a short film. But certainly in the feature film, that's what we'd like to do. And you look at any feature film that you see, it, you know, sucks you in and you get in with the characters. I would say what Hollywood does is they get the worst killers, the mercenaries and all sorts of people like that, humanise them, give them a family. You love them. Then, you know, something happens to them, their family gets killed or they go off to go, and then they go kill people and we're with them. Yes, you know, we're with them, kill those people, you know, whatever. But so the power of feature films is just great, and drama and dramatic features and so on. So that's what we want to do. But we, of course, we're from the working class. We want to show working class history. And I think that's slightly different to the way they do it in Hollywood. And certainly Hollywood's not going to fund this film. They don't like to see people struggling and then winning. And that inspires people to do the same. They're really on a one track, you know, it's the boss's world, the free market, and that's why it goes. So, yeah, we really want to make this film. It is going to take a lot of money, a lot of effort, but we'd really love to tell this story.
Okay. And so just very, very quickly, just to finish up, how do we... What's the game plan? How's this thing going to get funded? How can people support it?
Yeah, so we are asking for donations. We have done a crowdfunding, which was quite successful and helped us produce the short film. We're going to unions, to women's organisations, historical societies, legal bodies, asking them for donations. We have a website, www.jobsforwomenfilmproject.com. We have a Facebook page, just Jobs for Women Film Project. You can get in touch with us. There's a lot of information on the website. There's things you can buy, not just DVDs, but T-shirts and badges and various things. So, you know, we'd love anyone with a lot of money who really want to see working class films, particularly women's films made, that would be great. But that won't come easy for us. We know that. So, you know, we're on a mission to raise that money. So, yeah, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming along.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah. Jacob. Look forward to seeing this thing evolve further.